but really feel into what your home frequency is and decide, like, hey, do I want that to be my default frequency? Or do I want to shift it? Do I want to do what I need to do to, you know, let go of something so that I can shift my home frequency to something that I want to be at?
Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. Welcome officially to 2021. I know that this was the week that many of us slowly or maybe abruptly got back into the swing of things. Here at TBM, we, most of us, were able to take a full 7 days off of work in order to really just restore and collect ourselves and rejuvenate. For me, it was so tremendously medicinal. I hope it was for everybody on the team. It personally allowed me the space to really tap into all of my spiritual practices and go deep. I had been doing the magnetism challenge, but I was going through a very stressful time before moving into the holidays. Not crazy, right? Like being pushed to my edge while doing the magnetism challenge. You know, the moment you start creating that magnetism, the universe is like, cool. So here are all the obstacles you need to address and unlock in yourself in order to start connecting with what you're calling in, which was very much the case. It was a lot of fire and under pressure feelings for me. So moving into those full 7 days, we were able to take before Christmas Eve or Christmas Eve all the way to today. It just allowed me, and very, very organically, my body, my being pulled me into twice a day Vedic meditation, juicing, like it was very called to juicing and doing my Kundalini Kriyas, my sadhana in the morning, and doing my yoga stretches and just all of the things that tap in. Like I was kind of repulsed from TV, not in a bad way. It was just my whole being, aura, everything was like, you need to anchor in. And I was at the forest retreat house, so I was automatically immersed in nature and just had all of the tools there to support that experience, which then allowed massive channeling to come through, extreme grounding, which I'm really, my biggest goal is to continue while I'm here back in LA and to really, really stick with everything that's been coming through. So very cool new teachings for the new year to look out for eventually when they're ready to organically drop. And one really interesting thing that I wanted to talk about now that we're in 2021 and sort of the message I've been receiving, as well as certainly the people around me, even those who don't do this work, you know, like family and friends, seeing that we're all kind of being pushed up against the same space. So I'm like, oh, this must be sort of the early 2021 theme, and certainly would be the theme for most of us getting off of the magnetism challenge. But a lot of us are being pushed to our edge of our core childhood wounds. I don't know if that resonates with you. It might in a minute, especially if you did the challenge, but I'm seeing it even from friends and family who have nothing to do with this work. So what that can look like is a great example is my mom. You know, she's really, really been stepping into her authenticity, her power, her healing, and it's been profound to watch over the last 3 months. But it's great because right after she got done with sort of the clouded healing process, the universe was like, yeah, all this stuff that you're working towards and why you're doing this, you're really ready? Are you really gonna stick with this new journey, this new chapter? Or are you going to crumble back to your old coping mechanisms? And it's been like, honestly, breathtaking to watch her be like, no, I'm going to meditate instead. I'm going to connect with my guides instead. I'm going to go on a walk at the river instead. But what the universe is using is her like core Achilles heel wound, her biggest trigger. And it's really, that means big and beautiful things are trying to come through. And she gets it. She's been listening to this podcast enough and knows my work and everything where she can intellectualize that and understands it. But boy, is it fucking hard when that happens. And same with me. Especially the more clear I get, the more work that I was doing in the challenge and my spiritual practices, things that are bigger close, the universe is like, cool, let's really put the ammunition on you and see if you can handle truly jumping off these cliffs, truly not reacting. One tiny teaching that I actually do want to talk about right now to teach people, the more advanced you get in this work, the more that you can start to feel energetics and read them. Therefore, it's really interesting if you've been doing this work for a while to start looking at the space between tests. And what I mean by that is when we are tested, I personally tend to mostly be tested through triggers these days, less through opportunity, much more through triggers, because just like we learned during the magnetism challenge, that's the point at which the universe is really, really mirroring a block that I need to work through to connect with what I want. And so in this very particular moment, I'm certainly being triggered with some core childhood wounds. And the teaching that I really want people to simmer on, especially if you've been doing this work for a while and you are starting to read your own energetics, is the amount you react, your reactiveness to the trigger is going to determine how long you're tested and if you'll be receiving the test at a greater capacity. So for example, and this isn't something you can fake. Again, I really want to stress for the person who's just begun this work or is just listening into this. With this kind of work of manifestation, there is no spiritual bypass when you're really dealing with the energetics of manifestation. So there's no pretending to not be reactive to a test. You'll start to see how much your trust muscle is growing and strengthening based on doing this work, based on digging deep and unblocking and expanding and continuing to see that it works for you after you do. That's what determines how strong your trust muscle becomes. So when I'm saying this, the ratio at which you are reactive to a test. So when you're being tested with a core childhood wound, and it brings up everything inside of you. Maybe it's a security wound. So maybe it's a financial, and it brings up all the scarcity in you and the what if and the spin outs and okay, like a place I'll go to when this is happening with me is, okay, if I just cashed out everything I have right now, could I live off of that for how long? You know, things like that. I even see my mom going through that where it's like my retirement, what if I, you know? So when you become more advanced in this work and you're reading energetics, and that test presents, there's the opportunity, if you've done the work, the unblocking, you've taken to the DI, you understand why this is presenting, and you go, I'm going to feel my feelings, but I'm not going to resort to the normal old reactive behavior that I would do in the past. So mine can be codependency. It can be, you know, talking to those around me, not for advice, but just to be heard because I can't stand feeling the edge that I'm feeling or coping mechanisms. And again, these are totally fine if you do these, but the more your trust muscle strengthens, the more advanced you become in this work, you will notice that if you go, I'm going to center, I'm going to go to a DI right now, I'm going to feel my feelings all the way, but I'm not going to partake in the old low self-worth behavior, non-trusting in the universe behavior that I used to do in the past, because I see what's happening. I've been through this in the past. I know it's going to work out in my favor with manifestation because I have a strong trust muscle. It is going to drastically shorten the period of the test. It's going to speed up your manifestation quite a bit. So I just want to give that little bit of a teaching. It's okay to begin to start reading your energetics. It's okay, like, to spot the distance of how you used to react to tests and shortening them based on where you're at with your trust muscle. So if that felt a little jumbled, or if you're new to this, don't even worry. This is something I'll probably talk about this year, and I'll be able to deduce down and make it a little bit more actionable. But that's just something for those who have been working through this challenge, who do understand what I'm talking about, because that is what I'm seeing collectively, is a lot of our inner child wounds are being very much pressed right now. So if you identify with that, awesome, because weirdly and preemptively, before this even began at the end of 2021, for me and the people I'm seeing around me and people in our community group, we already as a team had decided that after the magnetism challenge collectively, that we would move into working through unblocked inner child together. So per usual, it's very kismet. This isn't a challenge or anything, but if you are wanting to work through this, face this, just know it's what we're going to be educating on this month. You'll be seeing it in the community group. The coaches will be sharing teachings on it. You will also be seeing it on Instagram. So you're not alone if you're going through that. We're all taking a big look at this together in Unblocked Inner Child. So that's sort of the little 2021 report that we are with you side by side. Also dealing with our deep inner child wounds that we're being pressed up against, myself very much included. The next thing to know, we are going to be launching something very, very, very exciting this month, something very much to look forward to. So if you're not already a part of our accountability text, text us at 1-213-423-5226 or sign up for our newsletter, because we will be announcing to you all first the new TBM product release. It's super exciting. Let's move into today's guest. That was a pretty lengthy little channeling intro. We thought this week would be the perfect time to get some insight of the astrology of 2021. It's an awesome guest. Many of you know her, Jill Winterstein of the very, very, very popular Instagram Spirit Daughter. It's really exciting what we go into in this episode, especially she goes into a very lengthy description of every single sign when it's presenting at its highest vibration or its lowest frequency, and how to look out for moving away from the lower frequency behavior, the less conscious behavior, into the highest frequency. So if you don't already have your chart pulled out, feel free to do it. Pull it out after this. A great place to go. I love to use Cafe Astrology, and I just literally type into Google Cafe Astrology natal chart, and I'll throw in the information I know about myself. If you do know your birth time, great, you can get into your houses. But if you don't know your birth time, you just know your birth date, where you were born, you can at least see quite a bit of information that'll be super pertinent during this episode, especially looking at, it'll show you all of your planets. So when people say, what's your sign? It'll show you your sun sign and, you know, your Mars, your Mercury, your Venus. And so you'll be able in real time while listening to this to look at what sign you have in each of your planets or houses, if of course you have your time. And you're literally going to be able to listen and in real time go, wow, okay, I see how I can move into a more magnetic version and say my Venus. You know, like during this episode, I really took away mine is an Aries, and it goes into how Aries can really present as self-absorbed or selfish if they're at their lowest vibration. But if they move into their higher vibration, X, Y, and Z. So you'll be able to really kind of look at that. We really talk about the cycles of the moon because she has incredible workbooks for them. And we go into other really interesting things about 2021, especially that great conjunction that happened on the solstice, which I kind of was joking with a lot of my friends. A lot of what I was seeing on Instagram felt like spiritual Y2K. So we kind of really ground out that information and what the cycle is really going to look like. But if you don't know Jill, which many of you do, she uses the framework of astrology to connect her following of over a million to topics such as vulnerability, emotional growth, leadership, and self-worth. Through her studies of psychology, research, Chinese medicine, and yoga, she explains principles of astrology in a way her community can understand, digest, and apply in practical ways in their own life. So through her monthly workbooks, Jill provides a holistic view to the cycles of the moon, which we totally go into about the workbook. It's really interesting, using tools like yoga, meditation, journaling prompts, and affirmation building exercises to empower her readers to break through self-imposed limitations towards their greatest life potential. A lot of alignment. So let's get into it now. All right. Welcome, Jill. This is going to be a very exciting podcast episode because I'm sure everybody is just baited, waiting to hear what 2021 is going to look like from your perspective. Before we get into all of that juicy stuff, I have it right in front of me, but I'll let you say what you are. We love to hear what everybody's, you know, primal triad is. What's your signs? What's going on with you?
Well, I'm a Leo and I'm a Scorpio moon, Libra rising, Leo sun. I have four planets in Leo. So I have a Leo stellium. So I have tons of Leo, tons of fire, very fiery, but luckily I do have that Libra to balance me out a bit and the Scorpio moon to cool me off with some water.
So. Yeah. In deeper introspection, it's so interesting because I'm a Aquarian sun, Capricorn moon, and then Leo rising. So, you know, there's a lot of primal triad compatibility, I guess, potentially.
Right. Yeah,
potentially. The other question, I'm currently pregnant. So I want to hear your thoughts on this because I know that you had your son last year.
I did. Yeah. Bodhi, he will be 17 months on Friday.
Wow. And did you, because I did, and this is probably so unbelievably narcissistic, but did you guys try for a specific sun sign?
We didn't try for a specific sun sign. We started trying knowing that if it worked that first time, we'd end up with a Leo.
Wow.
It wasn't that we really wanted a Leo. We were just like, well, let's try and then we'll end up with Leo. And I'm a Leo. My husband's a Leo. We're all Leos. And we're thinking about having a second. And I'm kind of like, I don't think we need a fourth Leo in the house.
You like need a Virgo to calm things down a little or something.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, maybe a Virgo, a Libra. I was like, maybe we'll switch it up with a Scorpio, you know, but we actually were thinking maybe Sag, you know, Sagittarius would really go well, I think, with all the fire.
Absolutely. And can keep up, but like a little less sensitive.
Right, right. A little less bossy. I can say that because I'm a Leo.
I totally hear you.
My husband and I are always like fighting for who's, you know, the leader of the pack. And I'm like, well, you know, we've got Bodhi who's coming up and he's going to want to lead at some point. And, you know, we need somebody who's just willing to go with the flow a little bit.
So. Yep. I love that. I think that's just so fun. I mean, we tried to get pregnant for 5 years and eventually ended up having to do IVF. And obviously that gives weirdly a lot of control, but we were also sort of shooting at first for my sun sign for Aquarius because we knew we were choosing a girl. And I just, you know, have so many in my life and love them. As things should happen because of COVID, we had to wait to do our transfer. So our next was Aries. And who knows? I mean, if she comes early or late or whatever, it'll be her journey, but that's what we shot for. A little bit of that wild Aries energy.
Yeah. And Aries and Aquarius get along really well.
We really do. And so far, my fiance, a lot of his business partners and stuff are Aries. And we've met a lot of little Aries girls. And obviously, as you know, so much plays into the chart, but we just thought that would be really fun. So we'll see. She might be a real wildcat.
Yeah. We have a friend who has an Aries baby. And he's a double Aries. His moon and sun are in Aries. And he's fiery. 9 months old. You can already tell he's a fiery one.
He's got a lot going on. Well, let's take it back a little because you have such an interesting path to what you're doing today. And obviously one that I'm really intrigued by is that you were really deep into the study of consciousness, which led you into becoming a neuroscientist and studying psychology and at Johns Hopkins.
Correct. Yep. Correct. That was like my last sort of formal place of study and work career was at Hopkins studying neurogenetics. And I got there through a path of really wanting to just study consciousness, wanting to understand humans, just what makes us tick, what makes us see the world similarly, differently, you know, what really is consciousness all about. And I probably started asking those questions at a relatively young age. And then when I was like 15, 16, you know, I got into astrology as a way of understanding consciousness. I got into psychology. That's when I got into crystals. You know, that's when I really started trying to expand my own consciousness, to study consciousness. And I ended up going to school for psychology and ending up in research which led me down a path to studying, you know, neuroscience and the brain and how the brain works. And can we find consciousness? Can we actually locate it and figure out where it is? So that was that path. And then I decided at one point it just wasn't for me. And I left because, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people get to that point and they can't leave. They feel trapped. So I took a leap of faith and I left. And I didn't know what to do with my life, but I figured it out. But yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
And I'm just curious, based on that path, which then you went into Chinese medicine, you're certified in yoga and had a really big practice, with the conversation of consciousness, deducing kind of into your own theory, just let's talk about that for a moment, like how consciousness plays into this particular time and space and what you perceive it through your lens.
Well, I think I really, when I got into it, I realized that we're energy. And I felt like a lot of studies in psychology and neuroscience and they were missing this energetic piece, which is so huge, and that we are energetically connected to so many things and people, and consciousness really resides at the intersection of our energetic fields. And so, you know, we each have this energetic field that extends far beyond our physical body. I think it centers most likely the heart. And we don't quite understand it. And I think, you know, that's what led me to really get into studying Chinese medicine, because they have a theory on our energetic structure, which is the meridians. Yoga, of course, has the subtle bodies. They have a system of energy, really looking at different philosophies that seek to explain or help us understand our energetic field. And I don't think any of them are wrong, and I don't think any of them are right. I don't think we've quite figured it out. And I think it'll be years, and it'll probably come down to physics merging with psychology and some other modalities to really get this to the point where we actually really understand it from a scientific point of view.
And can quantify it.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, some research article, you know, that can have a method section. But, you know, I do believe that we are energetic beings at our core, and everything within our body is actually determined by energy. It's like you look at our neurons, our cells in our brain, you know, they fire because of electrical impulse. And that's what's actually causing the transmission of chemicals and neurotransmitters in the brain. It's initiated by electrical impulse. And anything that conducts electricity, I mean, any electrician can tell you this, puts off an electric field. So, you know, it's sort of common sense to say, okay, well, if we are beings, you know, we've already proven in science that our cells are firing because of, you know, electricity in essence, to simplify it. So we are energetic beings. We have an energetic field around us and it extends far past us. And I believe that it's always intersecting with everything else that is in the world, the planet, the universe, and on some level, right? And this is sort of, you know, getting into like more unified theory, but at some level, we're connected to everything in the universe through our energetic field and its attachments, its connections. And I believe that consciousness resides within that connection, within that intersection of energetic fields. And, you know, there's layers of it. And so I'm conscious of hearing your voice right now. I'm conscious of the birds flying in front of me outside the window. So there's that kind of conscious, but I'm also more conscious on a subtle level. So there's part of me that if I sat in deep meditation without even talking to you, I could have a conversation with you. I could feel your energy, vibe with you on a whole nother plane, if I'm willing to kind of go in there. And then, you know, just like that, it's also like, well, we also can connect with the ocean. We can connect with the elements on that level. Everything has this energetic field that we can connect, we can become conscious of, right? Our consciousness can expand to include the energy of the ocean, the energy of the tree outside, the energy of Mars, the energy of the sun. Energy of the sun in Leo. It keeps extending, extending, extending. It's an infinite connection, right? But we as humans have a filter on our brain, on our perceptions that, you know, we can only take so much. So we filter out so much of this. So much is filtered out. And I believe part of developing consciousness through things like meditation and yoga and different modalities is getting us to a point where we can drop some of the filter, then we can expand our consciousness because we can deal with the information coming in. There's so much information we're connected to, but our conscious mind can only handle so much at a time.
I fully, fully concur and agree all the way. As a mom, how do you feel? Because it's so hard, I think, to keep that level of already connectedness that children have and the lack of programming and patterning and all of that stuff. Well, how are you navigating with Bodhi to try to preserve his authenticity in order to be connected at all times and feel that consciousness to the best of your capability?
We do very little direction with him. We really just kind of hold space for him to be himself and be his authentic self. We're learning from him just as much as he's learning from us. And I really try and view it as, you know, we're partners. We're partners in raising him, and not just, you know, my partner, but Bodhi and I are partners. And it's not like I'm this dominant force that is making him do these things or directing his attention in any way, because he is connected. I mean, these little beings, they come out, it's like they come out enlightened. And how do you kind of preserve that? It's a type of innocence in a way. It's this innocence of the universe you see come through them. And, you know, everything is new and everything is exciting and everything is can take any shape that he wants it to take. So I think just really holding space for him to be himself and not directing him so much, giving him the space, giving him like safe space to play in, but do whatever he wants and really explore who he is, and then really understanding his chart in some ways and just understanding where he may have come from. I love to look at a chart and really try and deduce what people were in their former life.
Wow, that's exciting.
It's fun. It's like a hobby.
And is that just through patterning that you can kind of see based on, you know, like the many charts you've read and obviously understanding all of the different aspects and everything that go into it?
Yeah, it's really about the lunar nodes. It comes down to the south node.
Wow, which is more of the shadow, right?
Which is more of the shadow. So I like to believe that most people, I'm sure there's exceptions, were their south node as their sun sign in their previous life. And then they're here to really incorporate their north node. And so for Bodhi, his south node is Capricorn, his north node is Cancer. And so in his previous life, he may have been a Capricorn and he may have had a pretty hard life. And with Cancer being his north node, he's really come to this life to learn how to be held and to cry and to express his feelings and his emotions. So, you know, I am very conscious of if he, say, stumbles and is crying, you know, I never say to him, oh, it's fine. You're fine. It's okay. You know, I hold him and I say, you know, I'm here to support you. I'm here to hold you. I understand that's scary. And let him cry. Let him process it out. Not really try and suppress him in any way.
That's such a cool direction of using astrology in parenting. I love that. Or like I like to say, it's like stewarding, because that's what you guys are doing together, right? It's like stewarding. But I love that. And that was one of the questions that I have for you, because I feel really, really deeply in my north node now, which is Taurus. And I feel like much more so than a lot of other aspects of my chart. I'm 36 in February, I'll be 36. And just really feeling into the pleasures of life and design and being grounded and, you know, with family. So talking about that, how can people start to understand the purpose of their north node, how to navigate it, and when you really start to come into it?
I think it takes a while to come into your north node. It took me until I was in my later 30s to really come into my north node. The south node, it feels familiar. It feels, you know it. You know it so well.
I will attest to that.
Yeah. But, you know, the point is that if we got it right, the last time around, and we figured out what we were supposed to be figuring out, we may not have come back again. So, you know, we're attached to our south node, but we're most likely attached to the lower vibrations. I think that every sign has a high side and a low side. You know, there's a higher vibration, a lower vibration to every energy in the universe. Astrology is definitely one of them. And so I believe that we come into this world knowing our south node through and through and being really attached to unfortunately, the lower vibrations, because that's probably what we knew the most in our former life.
And how to survive is sort of how I see it.
And how to survive. Yeah, exactly. And so, and that's what blocks us, right? So it's just like any comfort zone. It blocks us. It limits us. And so, you know, I've always struggled. My south node is in Pisces, and I love Pisces. It's my favorite sign. And I'm like, but I don't want to leave that. And it's not that you have to leave your south node. It's that you have to learn the lower vibrations, and you have to recognize when they come up in you and acknowledge them and do something to break that pattern. It becomes like a conditioned pattern. And so if you can break that pattern, then you can really step in and embrace your north node. And oftentimes we resist our north node. My north node's in Virgo. I resisted Virgo so much. My mother's in Virgo, and my Saturn happens to be in Virgo as well, which Saturn is like your responsibility in your chart, right? It's just no fun.
Is that often that the two are connected? Because my Saturn's in Scorpio, and so obviously my south node as well.
Yeah, no, they're not always connected. It just depends.
Okay.
It just sort of depends where, because Saturn changes signs every 2.5 years, but the nodes change signs every 18 months. So they're not always in the same sign. But, you know, my north node, is that's where my Saturn is. So my path was to let go of the lower vibrations of Pisces and step into Virgo and step into my responsibility and really embrace it, but also figure out how to take the knowledge that I had from most likely being a Pisces in a former life, which is consciousness, right? Pisces is all about consciousness and understanding the infinite potential of human beings through the lens of consciousness. So for me, I had to figure out how to take the good stuff, detach from the lower stuff, take the higher stuff, and then apply it within Virgo or use Virgo to somehow really give it to the world, which is why I now write workbooks that, you know, are in precise little boxes, very neatly organized and spell checked, and, you know, lots of Virgo qualities there. You know, Virgo is really about service and giving your gift to the world. So, you know, for me with the Pisces background, I had to figure out how to take this knowledge, right? So I was on top of the mountain, you know, studying consciousness and really, you know, come back down and figure out a way to be of service to others and give that knowledge to the collective. And it took me a very long time to figure out how to do that.
You are leading the conversation so well because a woman on our team, her big question for you, in a nutshell, I know this could get really lengthy, but kind of in a nutshell to help all the listeners who are obviously we all have all of these different wonderful signs, but, you know, speaking of the sun sign or when looking at different aspects of the chart, I always say, and maybe I'm incorrect on this, but I've always been like the conscious, you know, when I'm seeing, for instance, like a Scorpio friend, I'm like, well, that's a conscious version of a Scorpio friend versus the unconscious yet. Like they haven't come into their consciousness, which maybe isn't the right way to be addressing it, but sort of the higher vibration, like you're saying, the higher aspects and frequencies of a sign versus the lower, just kind of going through the 12 different signs. What would be some of those highlights of where people can, like you said, take the positives, the higher frequencies, and kind of start to look at how to eliminate, you know, what's no longer serving from the aspects of the sign that might be the lower?
Well, you know, starting with Aries, you know, Aries is often called, you know, it's a sign of the self, right? So we're looking at lower vibrations of selfishness. It's very, very typical Aries, low vibration, only thinking about themselves. The higher side is realizing they have to, as many of us do, put ourselves first, prioritize ourselves, and understanding that when we prioritize ourselves, we're then able to give to others. We're then able to, when we're our best selves, the world benefits, right? So with Aries, it's less about being selfish, but more about discovering who they are at their core, identifying their I am statements, feeling situations that encourage them to develop courage and develop a sense of adventure and really working on themselves without infringing upon other people. So it's, you kind of have to like walk that line as an Aries sun, of being selfish, but then also realizing that yourself does need to be a priority. So how do you do that without hurting others in any way? So that's kind of an Aries nutshell. And then Taurus, I love Taurus. It's one of my favorite signs. It's very still. It's very peaceful. But Taurus can get really stuck to their comfort zone, stuck to their attachments. They can become stubborn, right? Classic bull. They can really not want to grow because where they are is so comfortable. Taurus people love their comforts in life. They're also usually some kind of artist or musicians or work with their hands in some way. And so for them, they really need to find like that sense of inner peace and stillness to create from and feel that they are their own rock, feel their grounded earth beneath them. And then that knowledge allows them to leave their comfort zones because they know they can always rely on themselves no matter what happens, no matter what life throws them. If they take a leap and they leave their comfort zone, doesn't work out, they can rely on themselves. So that inner reliance, self-worth piece is huge, huge for people, the sun in Taurus, or if you're working with your north node. But you know, if your south node, for instance, is in Taurus, you have to learn how to recognize when you're limiting yourself because life just feels comfortable. And unfortunately, to grow, we often have to become uncomfortable.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child, and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else, such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the Pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the Pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode.
And then, you know, we go to Gemini. Gemini, fun sign, very curious sign, all about communications, you know, sort of classic thoughts about Gemini, but really about perspective. And that's what they're communicating about is their perspectives, their thoughts. And they're always seeking out new information. Low side of Gemini is rather closed-mindedness, right? They think they perhaps know everything and they forget that others are here to teach us, right? We can't know everything in this world. So we have to talk and connect with other people to figure it out. And in a low side of Gemini, they cause division and think that they could be correct and others are not. And the high side, they're curious and open and willing to have a conversation, willing to disagree, and that's okay without judgment, but just being genuinely curious and expanding their perceptions through communication. And then Cancer, which it's the full moon in Cancer today. Yay. All about the heart, compassion, taking care of ourselves. And a low side, Cancer is a very strong sign, such a strong sign, highly intuitive, and a lower vibration. Cancer suns can forget that. Or if the South Node is in Cancer, they could be sort of born like that, having forgotten their power of intuition, their power of strength, and may feel that they need to rely on other people for it. Perhaps they come off as emotionally needy or think that they need other people to help them solve their internal issues, when in fact they have all the answers they need because they have really heightened intuition. And so that's the high side of Cancer, would be really embracing intuition, feeling yourself, supporting yourself, right? Receiving support from others, receiving self-care from yourself, knowing that you can hold space to process your emotions and explore the depths of them as a way of accessing your inner knowledge. And so, you know, Cancer is very, very powerful for that. And then Leo. So for Leo, you know, Leo, obviously leader, courageous, open heart, you know, it's the open-hearted leader, benevolent leader. In their low side, though, they become dramatic because they are always seeking approval from others and they fear rejection and they need constant validation in a way to let them know that what they're doing is approved of. And so Leos are really here to take some risks and be vulnerable and put themselves out there. And that's why we always think of, like, again, like a musician or celebrity of some sort or spotlight. You know, we're always thinking center of attention, spotlight with Leos. And in many ways, they seek the spotlight because they're here to kind of put themselves out into the world and be vulnerable and allow that to open their hearts. But when they start really needing approval and really craving that and forgetting that the only approval they need is their own, that's when they go into the low side. And so to get to the high side, they need to figure out how to approve of themselves and know that that's all they need and still be courageous, still show up, still be a leader, but know that they just have to hold their presence and they will command the room. They don't have to seek attention.
I think that this, like my Leo rising and everything you just described, is what gets me into the most trouble of everything in my chart. Oh, it's like, I really do believe it's where all of my ego lies.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because, you know, Leos, it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one because, you know, Leos, they're here to take risks and to put themselves out there, to be vulnerable. And, you know, it's that classic, you know, line where just the moment you feel you've exposed too much is when you've just, you know, you've exposed enough finally. And, you know, that's just such classic Leo, where they're here to challenge themselves to really bear their heart, bear their soul, bear who they are to the world, right? Leo is very much, it's represented by the sun, it's the core, it's who we are. And so naturally, it's like you show the world who you are and you're like, oh, did you like it?
Yep, exactly. And if you don't, it's like, I'm really sensitive.
Wait, you don't like me? Wait, what?
Yeah, no, I get it.
So, but you know, once they do sort of gain that security and self-confidence, then they can be the leaders, you know, they can show up in this leadership role and say, okay, like, this is what I believe, and just know that people will follow them, not like step around quietly. But then, yeah, and then on to Virgo, which I talked a bit about before with my North Node. You know, Virgo is so much about service, and it is about, they're all extensions, right, of the other ones. So it's like in Leo, you figure out who you are. And in Virgo, it's like, well, then how do you give that gift? How do you give your uniqueness to the world? How do you be of service to the world? How do you help the world heal through your offering, through whatever it is you have to offer? And so the challenge becomes feeling good enough. And the low side, Virgos, lower vibration, they become perfectionists. They don't think they're good enough. They don't think their gift is good enough. They don't think they've done enough work. They haven't done enough courses. They haven't done enough this or that. There's a real sense of lack there. And in order to get away from that, they really have to, you know, feel good enough and feel that their as-is state is perfect for where they are, and give to the world regardless of if it's perfect or not. It's just better to show up than it is to spend years, you know, hidden away, hiding your talents away. And also to, you know, follow their intuition and feel their power. A lot of Virgos can get lost in the logical mind. It's just so appealing. You know, it's ruled by Mercury, Virgo is. And, you know, they often can get inundated in logical mind, the classic like spreadsheet scenario of pros and cons list. And really Virgos are highly, highly intuitive. It's a highly feminine sign like Cancer. And so once they can embrace their intuition, they really can give their gift and be of true service to the world. Very powerful sign. And then with Libra, scales, the sign of the scale is all about balance and creating balance within themselves and really developing tools. So Libra signs, your north nodes in Libra, it's really about developing tools that bring you peace and balance. It's not just about being peaceful all day, like waking up in a peaceful state. I am always calm. That's not the point. The point is for Libras to notice when things go off kilter and notice like, oh, hey, I'm about to have an emotional reaction. I'm about to be really angry. And instead, I'm going to my Libra toolkit. I'm going to take some deep breaths. I'm going to do some breath work, find some way to maintain balance because the world is chaos and Libras have the power to at least keep their inner seas at bay. But when they go into their low side, they forget that as their power. Libra is the sign of partnerships. They may rely on other people to help bring them balance, forgetting that they have that sense within themselves. They may look outside of themselves. And they also can become very passive and indecisive. So that's a Libra low side trait, is this indecision where, oh, well, I can make anything work, so I don't know what to do. Or like, you know, I'm just going to let life fall as it may and deal with it, which can be very good in some ways. I mean, we want to go with the flow and the rhythm of the universe at times, but there's also times when we need to be of action and take action. And so on their low sides, they can forget that and they become indecisive and passive and can even become passive aggressive with those around them. But, you know, the key is for them to really step into their power, knowing they have the tools to create balance and equanimity within themselves and within their partnerships and also within the world. And, you know, they are forces of justice in many ways and really can, you know, extend this feeling of equanimity outwards, like layers. I always think of Libra as layers. They can cultivate it within themselves and then within their intimate partnerships and then to the greater world. It's fascinating, Libra. The air signs, Libra, Gemini, they connect us, right? They connect us. And so we're always looking at sort of a broader connection with those signs. And then Scorpio, water sign. Scorpio is one of my favorite signs. That's where my moon is. And it's so deep. And it's so psychological. And it's probably why I got into psychology in the first place is Scorpio. They really are on a quest to experience life at its core, I feel like. Like they want to be brought into the present moment, sometimes through extreme means. You know, they want to experience the life, living it, including all of its ups and its downs and its harsh realities and its heartbreaks and but its joys and, you know, the full spectrum of feelings and energies. Like Scorpio is on a mission to experience them all. And I think, you know, on the low side, they can forget their intuition like Cancer because, you know, water signs are highly, highly intuitive. They can forget their intuition and they also can feel anxious. I know a lot of Scorpios will feel a lot of anxiety. They can feel very anxious because they're experiencing so much and they can get overwhelmed and they feel exposed in many ways and they can get swallowed up by fear when really they need to be fearless, dive into the depths of their own consciousness because they actually do have that ability to really unravel and understand so much of this world through the lens of energy, through the lens of really anything they choose, direct present moment experience. And so when they start feeling anxious, they can just escape, you know, and this, you'll see this pattern come up when we get to Pisces too, this escapism, you know, the water signs, all of them can have that, a bit of that as their low side because they experience so much and they try to escape it through whatever means they can. And, you know, the point is to stay in it, to stay in the experience and face it and confront it and learn from it and feel the energy that really binds us, threads all of the experience, all the sensations together, and recognize their power to really transform energies. Scorpio has the power to really transform their feelings, transform vibrations. They're really powerful beings, and they are, when they're in their high vibrations, they can step into that power and feel their mysticism in many ways. And then Sag, we got another fire sign, Sagittarius. Love Sagittarius. It's a kind of like a roller coaster when you go through like the whole zodiac.
Oh, I know. I'm sitting here being like, I hope everybody listening to this is beyond grateful, because this isn't just for your sun sign. Now you have the luxury of literally pulling up your chart and re-listening to this and looking at each of your planets and each of your houses, if that's like as far as you want to go, and really taking in all of these aspects. I mean, even just looking at our Venus, right? Like, you're giving such crazy downloads on a sign. Mine is an Aries, and I'm incredibly selfish in relationships with my Venus Leo partner. So it's like, I'm really listening to this and really looking at, yeah, you know, I can turn down my narcissism in the relationship and selfishness a little bit, put myself first, but then also see like, how can I then be more present for him? So I just really want to make that side note as you're, you know, going through this. This is a really big gift for every listener.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Absolutely. I'm really taking it in.
Good. So yeah, with Sag is all about expansion. It's like with Scorpio, they go deep. And with Sag, I always say, well, it's, you know, the energy comes up for air. I always look at the astrological wheel as an evolution of really the same energy, right? So we start with Aries, we make our way around the wheel to Pisces. So in Scorpio, the energy goes deep. And in Sagittarius, it comes up for air and breathes space and broadens the horizon. And so Sagittarius is really on a quest of knowledge and to accumulate experiences and to seek information from cultures outside of their own and connect with the world in unique and different ways to evolve themselves. It's really about the journey with Sagittarius. The low side comes in, and we'll see this, the south node right now is in Sagittarius, and the north node is in Gemini. And so collectively, we're all stepping away from the lower sides of Sagittarius, and any babies born, including your own, during this time, their job will be to let go of the lower vibrations of Sagittarius. And the lower vibrations of Sagittarius are judgment and a bit of self-righteousness and existential crisis, basically. And I will elaborate that on, because I think it's an important one right now, because like I said, the collective is going through this right now. So, you know, you picture Sagittarius, they're journeying through the world, they're connecting with other cultures, they're expanding their consciousness, they're bringing in all this knowledge and learning all these things. And then they go back to their hometown and they act like they know it all. And they act like, oh, I've seen the world now, so I know better than you. And this is a low side. I'm giving you a low side scenario, you know, and they start judging other people. Well, you haven't even left this town. You have no idea what you're talking about. And how can you even think that or do that? And, you know, you haven't experienced the world. You know, this is very low side Sagittarius. And, you know, it's kind of like the epitome of like of somebody on their high horse. And so like as a collective with the South Node Sagittarius, we're all being humbled right now, I feel like, where it's like, okay, it's time to shut up and listen to other people and realize that, you know, none of us know everything. There's not a single person out there that knows everything. There's not a single person out no matter how much you've traveled the world or how much you've experienced that can step into somebody else's shoes and know what they're experiencing. So, you know, it really is a time to let go of judgment of all kinds right now. And that is the lower vibration of Sagittarius. And then it's also a time to find higher meaning. So Sagittarius teaches us higher meaning. So for Sagittarius, you know, out there on the journey, life's going to take twists and turns. The Sagittarius mind frame says, okay, and this is the good part. Nothing is bad and nothing is good. It all just is. It's all just happening. Everything's happening as it's meant to be, to evolve me, to evolve my energy, to everything is part of my journey. Even if I don't like it, even if it seems negative, it's part of my journey. And so the higher vibration of Sag can always find the silver lining, find the higher meaning in everything. And, you know, in some ways, I feel like that's what we need to be doing right now as a collective, is trying to find some higher meaning to the world right now. And in the low side, we get existential dread, which is like, what's the purpose? What's the meaning of this all? You know, it's just all crapshoot kind of thing. You know, what is the meaning of life? So that's like the low side, the really low side of Sagittarius, which, you know, as a collective is our job to really step away from and find that higher meaning, as hard as it may be. And as many things that have occurred that we don't want to occur, we're being asked by the universe to find some meaning in it all, which is the essence of this South Node in Sag right now. And, you know, for people who are Sagittarius, that's their life mission, is to sort of find a deeper meaning, a higher meaning, and have the courage to go on their journey and accept it all for what it is. And then we get to Capricorn, which is the season we're in now. Very grounded energy, right? So Sag went and explored the world. Capricorn brings us back to the ground, to the earth, to focus, to our strength, to our power. In their high sides, in their high vibrations, you know, Capricorn knows they have the energy, they have the determination, they have the stamina, the motivation to climb any mountain. You know, nothing is too high for Capricorn. It's a sea goat, right? It can swim across the ocean. It can climb. It can do anything. Very, very powerful sign. Does like some solitude. Does like to be alone. And, you know, in their lower sides can become rather aloof and can become a bit judgmental, like Sagittarius, but a bit different, you know, because Capricorns, I feel that they're okay with being alone. They like their space. And I always tell any Capricorn I know that's in a relationship, like, just make sure you have your space. Like, just, you know, if you need your own room or you need your walks by yourself, just have your own space. Because Capricorns like their own space, and they don't necessarily like need anybody, you know? And when they get kind of stuck in that, like, oh, I don't need anybody, it can make them a bit judgmental and even selfish in their own way. So that's the, you know, sort of lower side. They also can become workaholics. Typical Capricorn archetype is the workaholic, you know, on the low side, where they're just like, they forget to eat and they're overproductive and they put too much emphasis on productivity and what that means. And they forgo self-care. And they forget to take care of themselves. You know, they burn the midnight oil, you know, because they're trying to be quote unquote successful, and may have a misrepresentation of what that means. And, you know, it's their job to understand that success means many different things. And, you know, part of that is connection with others. Part of that is self-care. Part of that is really enjoying your life, being in the present moment, you know, all those things. But very focused sign, very capable of many, many things. And then we get to Aquarius, your sign. We're talking about like how we just entered the age of Aquarius, which we don't really know when the age of Aquarius begins, but we definitely entered an air age for sure. For the next 200 years, we're in an air age with Saturn and Jupiter, with a great conjunction that occurred last week. So Aquarius, sign of the future, right? Progressive energy. Aquarius is the collective. It represents collective energy. Aquarius is on a mission to, like Leo, know who they are, but also to speak their truth, to share that with others, and not be afraid of seeming odd or a little bit off. You know, Aquariuses are always beating the proverbial drum to their own beat. And the point is that they want to get to a point where they know that they may be living in the future before others are there, right? So they're the visionaries of our world. And so they can see a way of life before other people start living it. And they may start living that way of life, and people may look at them like they're crazy. I don't know if you've experienced any of this. This is very typical Aquarian nature. And they just need to be so confident in themselves that they say, okay, I'm going to live the way I want to live. I'm going to speak my truth. I'm going to be who I am. I know it might seem a little off, but I'm not going to let your opinion deter me. And I'm just going to keep being me. And then the rest of the world catches up eventually. And then they're seen as like the great visionaries and having this wonderful imagination. And their low side, though, they can become very aloof, like very aloof, where it's kind of like the typical, you don't like me, fine. I'm going to go off into the woods and I'm going to do my own thing without you. And they stop contributing to the collective and they stop contributing to raising the vibration of the planet, which is their high side, is that they have the capability to really raise the vibration of the planet. But in order to do so, they have to take a couple stairs that maybe make them feel like they might be nuts on occasion. And if they let those stairs get to them, you know, they run off into the woods and they, you know, maybe they go live off the grid or something. And they say, hey, I'm not contributing my knowledge, my vision. I'm not helping you people out. I'm done. And so, you know, with the age of Aquarius, or, you know, the air age coming up, it really is our job to think about how each of us can raise the vibration and we can contribute and we can be our individual self and know what it is we truly believe. Not what we were taught, not the conditioned patterns of our parents or our community, but really know what it is that we truly believe, speak our truth, and show up in the world in a way that can raise the vibration of the planet. And people with their sun signs and Aquariuses are born into this mission, and the rest of us are just here because we're entering the air age at the time and place where we are. And then last sign, Pisces. Pisces, another water sign. Highly intuitive, understands, you know, the infinite nature of the universe. These are our healers of the zodiac because they can take on any energy and understand it and help somebody heal. But their job really is to understand that they can let go of that energy as well, right? So these are our empaths. And they need to learn that they can pick up energy really quickly and they also can, like, they can let it go very quickly as well. I know a lot of Pisces, and they get stuck in the, I'm just picking the energy up, and they don't know which feelings are theirs and which are other people's. And it can be very troubling. They can be very sensitive energetically and emotionally, very creative. And they're really on a mission though, to understand how to flow and dance with life and really feel their expansiveness, feel their consciousness, dive into spirituality and you feel their power, feel their intuition, really, really intuitive sign, but can be prone to like escapism or wanting to just sort of run away or do things that allow them to numb out emotionally because the world can feel like so much to them. Energy can be very overwhelming that they're tapped into. And so they need to find tools that can help them release energy and ground within themselves and feel their power, feel their power.
That was perfect. It was honestly perfect. And we've never had anything like that on the podcast before. So I really hope people do take the time to reference that with their chart and come back to it because, you know, and we'll get into this a little bit more. I really like your perspective on the lower frequencies or the higher frequencies of each sign and then the moon and et cetera. So that'll be a really great basis for another question. But you did touch on something that was obviously, like, you know, I would say the greatest hits of December, the great conjunction of December 21st. And I have to be really honest. So I was seeing all of these things, you know, pop up, and I'm actually incredibly logical. I think it's that Capricorn influence where I'm seeing everybody posting and they're like, we're going into the Aquarian age with this. We're moving from 3D to 5D. And there's a part of me that's like, wow, people over spiritualize something that's going to take 200 years or it'll be in motion for 200 years into complete spiritual bypass. So it's like, okay, yes, what you're telling people is they're going to wake up tomorrow and all of a sudden people's shadows will be erased and their trauma's gone and everyone's just going to be, you know, high vibes. And it's like, I was kind of calling it the spiritual Y2K because people, I don't think, were grasping like the reality of it and the depth of it and the length of it and kind of our parts in it, what we each play individually and collectively. What are your thoughts on the your unique vision and how to work with it and harness it rather than just playing into all of the hype?
Well, I think this is just the beginning, like you were saying. I think that we've been gearing up for this all year. 2020, obviously, tumultuous year to say the least. And it's taken us on such a roller coaster. And I remember in March kind of looking at the transits, just seeing what was going on astrologically and picking that Jupiter-Saturn conjunction and going, we're headed to this. This is what we're headed to. And knowing that kind of everything we went through as a collective in 2020 really was to reveal a bunch of shadows. In some ways, there was a lot of light, I feel like, that got shown in 2020. There's a lot of heart-opening experiences. But when you have that much light shining out into the world, you also reveal a lot of shadows. And we got to see the underbelly and we got to see the work. And then, you know, Jupiter and Saturn come along and usher us into the air age. And it's like you said, it doesn't happen overnight. It's not like we get to hit a button and we all ascend. Or I heard so many crazy things that people thought were happening. And it doesn't work like that. I mean, you know, I think when we're dealing with a collective shift, the way we've been dealing with all of 2020, and we're going to continue dealing with, it takes time. And it takes a lot of time. We kind of know what we're having conversations about now. And our job is to do the work to change the collective consciousness, right? Because that's really what these shifting in ages are all about. We're shifting the collective consciousness. We are doing the work to raise the vibration, but it's just that it's work. It doesn't happen overnight. And so I think that the light was shown. We see the shadows. We're seeing the work that does need to be done on a collective level. And now it's time to do some of that work. It's not going to happen overnight. You know, this particular meeting of Saturn and Jupiter, that energy will last till about March. So it's like layers, right? So we're looking at this overall 200-year cycle. But really, you know, let's deal with what happened in 2020. Let's deal with Saturn-Jupiter meeting on December 21st in 2020. That energy is going to last about 3 months. And you can work with that energy in your chart and see where that lands. You know, you're looking at where Aquarius, what house Aquarius lands for you and governs for you. And that's the area of your life to funnel some of this energy. So that's where you start, right? And I actually have an IGTV live that I did on the conjunction that goes through all the houses.
We'll link that.
Yeah, that goes through all the houses. So like if Aquarius is in your fifth house, this is what to kind of look for with this conjunction. So for me, that was the culmination of a year, that December 21st meeting, and then also a bridge to the next 3 months. And so it's really about what we're doing now until about March. And then, yeah, it does extend for a long time. And Saturn's going to be in Aquarius until 2023. So we'll be working with that energy for 3 years with Saturn in Aquarius. And Saturn's going to do some interesting things this coming year. And our focus really is on Saturn right now and what that planet's doing. Because in Aquarius, it really does bring our attention to responsibility, to the collective. Which is, you know, Saturn's responsibility, its laws, its governing bodies, its karma, it's all those fun things. It's like the no fun zone. Jupiter, way more fun.
Way more fun. Way more chill and abundant and happy.
Yeah, I mean, I'd much rather go, you know, have dinner with Jupiter any day. But, you know, I feel like much of 2020 has really been dictated by Saturn and Capricorn hanging out with Pluto. And Jupiter just kind of came in to lighten things up a little bit. We're lucky we had Jupiter, although the planet does expand things. And unfortunately, we got some things expanded this year we didn't want expanded. So all eyes on Saturn throughout 2021. And Saturn and Aquarius. And I feel like the Saturn-Jupiter meeting is illuminating some work we can do as a collective within the next 3 months until March. So for me, that's really what it was all about. And whatever that means for you, Jupiter also shows us our highest potential. So Saturn work, Jupiter highest potential, there we have it for the collective, right? So what work do you need to do to reach your highest potential to raise the vibration of the world?
I think that's a really grounded perspective on it. And I think people were really missing the mark in the prediction of it. So I that's something like manageable that we can all work with. And it highlights the collective as well as the individual. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And then I'm going to just ask your overall perspective, sort of themes you're seeing for 2021 to hopefully breathe a little bit more hope into every listener through your unique lens of astrology.
Well, I think that So Saturn and Jupiter and Pluto are all in those final degrees of Capricorn dancing around each other all of 2020. And it was just a mess. You know, Pluto is the sign of transformation. It's a sign of cycles, rebirth, birth, death. It's all in there. It's also the sign that governs pandemics. So, you know, here we go, Pluto. And having Jupiter near Pluto, expanding Pluto, like I said, is not that great. And then also having Saturn involved as well with its sort of more strictness and, you know, it's kind of, these are the consequences of your actions vibe and, you know, limitations, right? Saturn's very limiting. I feel like we've all felt the limitations this year. So having Saturn and Jupiter move into Aquarius right there, it's just like, get them away from Pluto. So that's good news. Like the fact that the trio is breaking up is great. You know, that's what we need. Saturn and Jupiter alone, we can deal with. But them next to Pluto, it's just not good. So that's wonderful. And I think that some of the worst is behind us. But I also think that there's still a lot to be done. And Saturn, that's like I said, all eyes on Saturn. So the big three transits or the big three meetings of 2021 are Saturn squaring Uranus. Uranus is in Taurus right now. And with Saturn squaring Uranus, there'll be three squares, February 17th, June 14th, and December 23rd, 24th, depending where you are in the world. And that's going to be an interesting one because Saturn's in Aquarius. Saturn is very earthy, right? Rules Capricorn normally, and it's in Aquarius, an air sign. And, you know, that's pointing our focus to our responsibility, the collective, like I said. And then we have Uranus, which is the ruler of Aquarius, who likes to break things up and likes to push us forward. There's also an air of technology in there too, because Uranus and Aquarius both rule technology in many ways. But Uranus is in Taurus right now, which is an earth sign. Not that happy there, by the way, you know, because Taurus doesn't like to move forward and Uranus just wants to shock and awe us forward. So with them squaring, it's really reading as, you know, a break in the system. Saturn being the system and Uranus breaking it. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing what that means and how that plays out. And that those three dates and those squares are the big things everybody's talking about in 2021 and seeing how they manifest. And for us on a personal level, it may be just like breaking away from the old, right? Breaking away from old patterns, from old beliefs, from old ways of being, from things you thought you should do or had to do or were obligated to do, breaking away from your responsibilities that don't align with who you really are and who you are in this world. You know, really forming a future vision of yourself and maybe creating cracks in your own foundation in order to build the life and the person who you need to be for yourself in this lifetime and for the planet.
You see, it's so interesting. I feel that energy percolating, like I intuit that. That's on a personal level, what I'm even going through, like, and probably pregnancy is really playing into that, but really feeling that transition into this year of deep reception, like receiving everything and getting deeper into my authenticity. And so that really resonates.
Yeah. And just, you know, because so many of us are just living lives that we think we have to live or we should live or we feel obligated to live.
Or we were conditioned to live.
Or we conditioned to live. Exactly. And it's about, you know, living the life our soul wants to live.
That's really what we're here for. You know, that's the whole shebang, it seems so far. Well, then let's round out because I'm sure you're going to need a nap after this conversation. Let's round out. I love, so you were generous enough to send your full moon, well, both the new moon and full moon, but I received today, we're recording on Cancer's full moon workbook, your full moon journal. And there were some really interesting, you know, as you can tell, I'm interested in astrology. And there were some interesting insights that I hadn't really taken into consideration before. And one in particular, which also Jessica noticed because her sister actually happened to gift her the workbook for Christmas. You talk about the full moon, it helps to reveal our resting home frequency so that we can adjust to help align with our manifestations. And I just love that she picked up on that as well. That was a really beautiful thing I was looking at while working through the workbook is, you know, looking at that home frequency and how this particular moon, actually, I don't really have much Cancer in my chart, how this particular moon is really, really highlighting a lot of emotion, just as you captured in the workbook. So can you talk about that a little bit? And then I want to talk about the workbook further, your home frequency and how the moon can help you understand your resting, your lower frequency, higher frequency. I love that perspective.
Yeah. Well, the full moon, the beauty about the full moon is it reveals, right? So we have opposition of sun and moon on a full moon. On a new moon, they're together in the sky. On a full moon, they oppose each other. And that opposition reveals our lower and higher frequencies. So every full moon is an opportunity to say, okay, which lower vibrations of these signs, right? We're dealing with Cancer and Capricorn today because the moon is in Cancer and the sun is in Capricorn. What lower vibrations of Cancer and Capricorn may I be aligning with, and how can I release them, right? And that's what everybody talks about, full moon as a time to release. We can get more specific than that. We can say, okay, well, I'm going to release the lower vibrations of Cancer and Capricorn that I may be feeling at this time. And I'm going to embrace the higher ones. I'm going to embrace the, you know, figure out what I need to do to shift and embrace the higher vibrations of these signs. Now, when we're working with Cancer, we're working with our emotions. We're working with our home. Cancer is one of the most subjective energies, meaning we really can go within and feel our deeper landscape and understand our home frequency. Understand. I like to think of the home frequency as like our resting heartbeat. What frequency are you naturally at? What frequency do you wake up in? What frequency do you return to after maybe deep meditation? You've cleared out all the other fluff in your life or whatever else is spinning around in your mind. You know, so you can be in these different frequencies. You can, maybe your home frequency is love. Maybe it's gratitude, but maybe it's sadness. Maybe it's anger. Maybe it's frustration. Maybe it's boredom. Maybe it's resentment. You know, maybe it's hope. Maybe it's joy. And it's not to say we feel those things all the time. It's just that's kind of what our energy rebounds back to when we have, you know, cleared everything else out. That is our resting frequency. And so this moon is really a time to help feel what your home frequency is. And this full moon in particular, Cancer full moon, but you can work with it at any time. I like to talk about it also in Aquarius season, because Aquarius season really helps us get to our home frequency as well. But really feel into what your home frequency is and decide, like, hey, is that the frequency I want to be at? Do I want that to be my default frequency? And this is like kind of like your default in a way. Or do I want to shift it? Do I want to do what I need to do to release emotions or release blocks or process something or, you know, let go of something so that I can shift my home frequency, so I can shift it to something that I want to be at?
I think that's so cool, that perspective, because I certainly work with the moon, and our terminology is always like looking at the blocks and releasing those over the lunar cycle. And I think that's so beautiful to be able to have that knowledge to tap into your home frequency. And so that was really cool. And I'm going to be doing further work on it tonight within the workbook, but I just really love that. And I thought that was a cool piece of education that everybody could benefit from. And I just have to compliment you on the workbook in general, the Moon Journal. Not only do you go into, obviously, educating on the full moon, but you go into exactly that, like what's going on with the sun opposing the particular sign. You go into the houses, so where this particular moon falls in your houses. You go into what you can do with cards. I mean, it's just such a cool workbook. So I really have to commend you, and I'm really grateful for having received it. I can't recommend it enough.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, I love doing them. They're great.
And I was like, wow, as I was looking at it, I was like, she pumps these out like twice a month, basically. I'm like, wow. I have to like pull my hat off. That's a lot of work and education. And so for anybody out there, we will certainly have them linked below. And where else can everybody find you?
either on the Instagram at Spirit Daughter or on the website, spiritdaughter.com.
Wonderful. Well, I'm so grateful for your time and energy today, and I'm really excited to get this out in Capricorn season, early 2021. Give people a little bit of hope.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is the Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, the Motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.